I will close off this slide dealing with the contract on the changes, the main changes between the contract used in the June procurement event and the contract that has been finalized and posted yesterday, October 6th, on the website for this upcoming procurement event. And then I will talk and have a quick word about the invoicing processing delays that I mentioned earlier. So in terms of the changes, just take note that there is a red line document posted on the website that is dated September 28, and that document provides the red lines between this, the contract used for this procurement event and the one that was used in the June procurement event. The main changes are threefold. I will just go through them here. One is that most of them are administrative in nature, providing a contract number on each page of the contract. There are placeholders now for dates so that you will remember to date your contracts as you sign them and provide them back to the IPA. The appendices are now identified by numbers instead of alphabets so that you don't get confused between Exhibit A and Appendix A, because now it's all Appendix 1, 2, 3, and 4 instead of Appendix A, B, C, and D. There is a maximum contract amount field that is added so as to comply and facilitate the filing of these contracts with the state. And this maximum contract amount field is provided so that the state will know how much the maximum contract quantity and the price and payout would be under this contract, together with any refunds for performance assurance or that must be issued pursuant to this contract. There is also a field for the contract expiration that has been added in the contract itself. The only substantive change here in this contract is to be more explicit that we are accepting now what we call the certificate of completion in lieu or in addition to the interconnection agreement that was previously required here. So what we have made clear in the contract is that if you are able to provide us what we call the certificate of completion that is widely known in an industry, that document is acceptable for this purpose. And in terms of a process change, as I've mentioned earlier, is that if you have forecast REC quantities that are awarded to you, there is a earliest date in which you may identify your systems and provide the documents to the IPA for processing. You can provide them earlier if you like, but the IPA will only process the documents and materials related to the newly identified systems on or after the earliest system identification date. And here we have one slide to close off this section with the invoice processing delays. So here, as the IPA is a state agency subject to certain state requirements, the state of Illinois budget has not yet been officially adopted, and the appropriation for the Illinois Power Agency has not been approved as of this point in time. So the IPA is facing delays or experiencing delays in the payment of invoices until the 2016 fiscal year Illinois state budget is officially adopted. Such delays apply not just to the SPV contracts here, but also applies to all vendors, anyone doing business with the state of Illinois. At some point in time, the budget will be approved, and we're just making this known to you that the IPA for the return of cash as bid assurance or the return of cash as performance assurance collateral will have delays in the refunds and the processing of these refunds. But there will be generally no delays in the return of letters of credit for this purpose. So with that, I will turn the time over to Dr. Chantal Lacasse, who will walk us through the RFP process and we will pause at the end for questions after this. Dr. Lacasse?
Thank you, Mr. Chi. Good afternoon, everyone. And I'll try to the extent I can to address the questions that have already been asked as I talk about these topics in the second part of the presentation. Just a quick reminder about the calendar. The calendar is posted to the website, and I'll show you the link in a couple of slides. We will be posting shortly after this webcast the final RFP documents. Some drafts were posted on September 25th, and the part one window, so the first time at which you can log in to start providing your materials for the part one proposal is tomorrow. We will be issuing login credentials to entities that have participated in the June procurement event or that obtained an account at that time. And what that means is we'll be reissuing your username password for access to the proposal website where you will be submitting your materials. So you should get that from us, your login credentials, as well as instructions for you for the submission of the materials online. There is a fairly long window for the Part 1 proposal. You have a couple of weeks, and we'll explain why that is, and that there is a fair amount of information to be provided during that portion of the proposal process. The Part 1 window closes on October 23rd, so that's the Part 1 date, the end of the Part 1 window when the Part 1 proposals are due, and then there is a time for review and then a notification of whether you have been successful in your Part 1 proposal on October 30th. The Part 2 window then opens on the next business day, November 2nd, and closes on November 6th, the Part 2 date. So that's when, in particular, the bid assurance collateral will be due, and I'll talk about that a little bit more. Finally, the bid date is November 12th, and there will be bidder training, so that means your opportunity to try out the bid submission process a couple of days before the bid date and to make sure that all systems are a go from your end. After the bid date, each of the procurement administrator and procurement monitor submit a report to the Illinois Commerce Commission, and that's 2 business days after the bid date. That's when it's expected. Also expected would be the ICC decision on November 18th. Of course, there could be changes to the commission schedule, but that's what we're expecting at this time. On everything that we've talked about today, and Mr. Chi mentioned the controlling documents for the plan and for this procurement event as well. Those are available from what I will call the procurement website. So that's the website where you will get information and the documents for this procurement event at ipa-energyrfp.com. And you will see on the left-hand side a navigation bar with various pages that refer to specific procurement events, and the one you want is the supplement PV procurement section where you will have all the documents for this procurement event as well as information on the prior prior procurement event. Now, that's the information website. There is also, through this website is where you will access the online form through which you will provide your materials for your proposal. So at the bottom of the navigation bar on the left-hand side, there is a qualification form link in which if you're a returning participant, you can simply log in with your login credentials once the Part 1 window opens tomorrow. If you don't have an account yet, then you may register to obtain an account. You will be asked to provide some basic contact information, name, company, email, phone number, and importantly, to pick the procurement event that you want an account for, and you will be choosing or selecting supplemental PV in terms of the category at the bottom of this form. So once you click that, we will then return to you login credentials, namely a username, password, to be able to log into your account, as well as instructions. And once you have logged in, you will have, in addition, in a toolbar beside the Part 1 form, a description of the process for review of your proposal, as well as a glossary of terms, which is one of the appendices to the RFP rules. So as I mentioned, there are two parts to the proposal, Part 1 and Part 2, and what I'll do in the next few slides is provide some details on the items that you will be required to provide in the Part 1 and Part 2 proposals, as well as the process that we will be using to review your materials. So in the Part 1, bidders provide contact information, provide information regarding the systems that you have identified and you will be submitting for bids, and or the forecast quantity for the sub-25 categories. You're also required to submit certain certifications as specified in the RFP rules. Now, for bidders that are returning, that is for those that participated in the June procurement event under the supplemental PV RFP, you will not have to resubmit all of the information or all of the documents that you may have submitted at that time. In particular, when you open the Part 1 form, you will see that some of the information is pre-populated. In particular, the contact information is pre-populated. So you may change it, of course, if there have been changes. But to the extent that it remains valid, then it is there for you. And once you submit the form, if you did not make any changes, you will be confirming that the contact information that we have in the form has remained valid. So at a high level, the Part 1 proposal then consists of the information that you will have submitted or confirmed through the online Part 1 form, as well as documents, supporting documents and inserts. We've mentioned those already. Those are separate forms that you can fill in and then upload to the online form. Now, a quick note that sometimes there are size issues with the supporting documents, so your support documents may be too large for the form. If that happens, please email us and we'll provide alternate instructions for submission of your materials. To go a little bit into the detail then of those items for the Part 1 proposal, in terms of contact information, of course, the name and address of the bidders, and then the contact information for your representatives. So we will be sending all communications to your representatives. One representative is identified in the online Part 1 form. The other ones may be named. Up to three additional representatives may be named through an insert, which is a separate word form that you can fill in separately and then upload to the online Part 1 form. You're also asked to describe the role that you have in the development and operation of the systems. Now, on the right-hand side, you have two columns basically telling you whether returning bidders have to submit that information as well, or whether it's only new bidders. And as I indicated previously, for the contact information for the bidder and the representatives, the information that is on the online Part 1 form will be pre-populated and you may update it as needed. But all bidders will need to provide the representative insert, which is numbered P1-1, if they want to provide contact information for additional representatives. Now, for identified systems, you will be asked to provide the system characteristics, and you will use for that purpose an Excel insert, the worksheet insert, which is numbered P1-2, and you will provide the size of the system, the location, the interconnected distribution utility, the energized date, as well as naming and providing contact information for various parties that may be involved in the development of the system, such as the system owner, the host, the customer, or the seller. Now, you will have heard in the first part of the presentation, same thing in the second part of the presentation, us talking about owner, host, customer, seller, et cetera, those terms are defined in the glossary and it will be useful for you to refer to that glossary as you are filling in the online Part 1 form. Very briefly, the system owner is the individual or company that has title to the recs for a given system. The host controls the site where the system is installed. The customer is the customer behind whose meter the system is. And finally, the seller is going to be the entity or person that would be the counterparty to the IPA under the SPV contract. For the systems that are identified, there is also documentation that is to be provided. Some of this documentation is for all systems. Some of this documentation is circumstance specific. So sometimes it's needed, sometimes it's not, and that's spelled out more precisely in the RFP rules. So there are certifications that have to be provided and through the completion of the backup insert, in particular certifying that the size that is provided is the size of the system, and the size is a DC amount, DC rating, not AC rating. That's a question that we got in the first part of the presentation. And there's also documentation to be provided. If the seller and the owner are not the same individual or company, then a seller-owner agreement or letter of intent is required under this portion of the Part 1 proposal. Also documentation if the system has already been energized, and as was mentioned, the certificate of completion is one of the pieces, one of the documents that you can provide in response to this item. And finally, if the system owner, so the individual company that has title to the racks, is not also the host, so does not control the site where the system is installed, then a host acknowledgement is asked for under this item of the Part 1 proposal. Now, for returning bidders in particular, if one of the systems in this proposal is a system that may have been submitted in a prior procurement event, either under the June procurement event under the SPRFP or the DGRFP, to the extent that you submitted the system at that time, that the system did not win, was not part of winning bids at that time, and you provided those documents, and we can identify your system, then those documents do not need to be resubmitted. What we ask is that you provide the system identifier, so that's the unique number, normally it's letters and numbers, that are provided in the bid form for the procurement event that in our database uniquely identifies your system. And if you provide that to us and we can match it in our database, then if you have submitted those documents in the past, you will not need to resubmit those documents to us. There's also, in the Part 1 proposal, you will be asked some information about forecast quantities if you are opting for including forecast quantities in your proposal, and you will be asked for that quantity of RECs that's on a forecast basis, and just a reminder that the sum of the forecast quantity and the RECs that's associated with identified system in the sub-25 category, so smaller than 25 kilowatts, has to be at least 500 RECs. Now, in the June 2000 procurement event, there was also a maximum on the number of RECs, and there are no longer this maximum in this procurement event. So there's just kind of a minimum of 500 RECs in the sub-25 category that can be either forecast quantity or identified system or a combination of both. There's a forecast quantity the bidder also has to identify one seller as being an aggregator, and that party would be the signatory to the SPV contract for that forecast quantity, and there are also certifications that are specific to the forecast quantities. Finally, in the Part 1 proposal, you will be required to make certain certifications, and those are in one particular insert, which is a word form, P1-5, that will be required as part of the proposal. And also, this is optional but important, you are able to provide comments on the letters of credit, and that's the pre-bid letter of credit and the standard post-bid letter of credit. So let me pause on that a little bit. We mentioned that there were potential delays for the return of cash from the situation of the Illinois Power Agency, so that to the extent that for that reason you would be considering providing a pre-bid letter of credit with your Part 2 proposal, I'll mention that the Part 2 proposal window is fairly short, so that this comment process is your opportunity to start the process of being able to put a pre-bid letter of credit in place as your bid assurance collateral for your Part 2 proposal. And this comment process is really your opportunity to work with your bank and have their potential changes of language or suggestions on the letter of credit, submit that for review so that you know if some of the changes that are required by your bank would be acceptable to the IPA and thus would make it easier to obtain the pre-bid letter of credit. So you have that 2 weeks in the Part 1 proposal window to start that process and have things lined up if you decide to go the pre-bid letter of credit route for the bid assurance collateral, to have that lined up for the Part 2 proposal. So for the Part 1 proposal process, I went through what's included and what's needed in the Part 1 proposal. We evaluate your proposal once you click Submit in the online Part 1 form. And while we're evaluating your submission, you will be locked out of your account, so you will not be able to make more changes while we are in the process of reviewing. We review, so we're going to be sending an acknowledgement back to you that we receive your proposal the same day if your materials are received before noon, so all the times here are central prevailing time, or the next day if the materials are received after noon. Now, a little note here, if you're providing documentation for a number of systems, so 15 or more systems, then we may lag one day in completing our review. So what that means is we'll send the acknowledgement, so if it's received 10 a.m. and your materials are received and you have a high number of systems, more than 15 systems, we'll provide a notice to you by the end of the day, but that notice may not have a complete review of all documentation for all systems, and if that's the case, we will note that. We will note any requests for additional information and complete information that you've had at that point. We will note any deficiencies in your proposals at that point, but we will also note for you that we may have other items for you to clarify when we complete the review of all documentations for all systems. And generally, you will have until the Part 1 date or 2 business days to respond to a first request for additional information. Now, our notification, our acknowledgement, and the results of our review are going to be provided by email to all representatives. Any documents that we deliver back to you, so for example, in the Part 1 notification, will be delivered via secure electronic file transfer, and just a reminder that the Part 1 date is on October 23rd. So moving to the Part 2 proposal, the Part 2 proposal is really in two packages. So first, bidders provide their update to their contact information, make certification, and optionally provide information to prepare the SPV contract. Now, something that was not mentioned in the first part of the presentation that is new this time, and that is important in the sense that, as I mentioned, the Part 2 window is fairly short, is that you'll be required in the Part 2 proposal to provide the IRS W-9 form and your tax identification number form. So the IRS W-9 form you will be required to use the December 2014 version of that form, so including the latest update. And the tax identification number form is actually an appendix to the SPV contract. So appendix one, as we mentioned, are the Illinois terms and condition, and that's subdivided into a number of different components, one of which is appendix 1.5, the tax identification number form. So you'll be required to submit both of these forms in your part two proposal. So then the part two proposal will consist of those information and documents that you will submit through the online part two form, bid assurance collateral, again, cash or the pre-bid letter of credit, understanding that there are delays in processing any requests for return of cash, but those delays do not apply to the cancellation and returns of letters of credit. And so that's kind of one package. The second package are the bids that will be submitted on the bid day, November 12th. So the Part 2 proposal, if we don't think about the bids that are due November 12th, the Part 2 proposal, the rest of it, has to be received by the Part 2 date on November 6th. Okay, the bid assurance collateral, in terms of amounts, the deposit under the contract is $16 for forecast quantity, $8 for identified systems. So on a bid assurance collateral basis, on a pre-contract basis, the amounts are half of that, so $8 for forecast quantities and $4 for identified systems. Again, as we mentioned, cash or letter of credit. If it's a letter of credit, it can be in the standard form, and the standard form is provided as an appendix to the RFP rules or incorporates only modifications accepted by the IPA. And it is not uncommon for banks to request modifications, small changes in language, and so on. And the Part 1 proposal is your opportunity to work with your bank to get those modifications for review by the IPA and hopefully be part of the acceptable modification that you can use at the Part 2 proposal stage. You can also provide special instructions for the return and cancellation of the pre-bid letter of credit within the Part 2 forms. If you do choose cash, there are three methods. Those have not changed. You can write a check to the Illinois Power Agency. There's an e-check option, and there's an ACH option. And to have the exact methods and instructions, you can email us and we'll provide the instructions for cash deposits. Now, something that you will see in the bid form and that we've talked about is that there is a certain number of RECs that are going to be associated with each system, and that REC conversion, so from the size that you will provide in the Part 1 proposal, we will hard code that and put that in your bid form as being the size of your system, and then we will convert that for you into a number of RECs that are associated with the system as well. That conversion uses a capacity factor of 14.38%, so it takes the size of the systems divided by 1,000 to put it on a megawatt basis times the capacity factor, 14.38%, times the number of hours and the number of years, 5 years, to get the number of RECs. Now, we will make that conversion on a system-by-system basis, so it means it gets rounded on a system-by-system basis. So when you're calculating the amount of bid assurance collateral that you need based on your number of RECs for identified systems, remember that this is the way we're calculating it. You can rely on our calculations here. You can see that you could get a different number, a slightly different number, if you aggregated all of your kilowatts and did the calculation on that basis instead of doing it system by system. Again, that calculation is going to be on the bid form, and also on the bid form is going to be the amount of bid assurance collateral that's required given the bids that you are intending to submit. So for submission of the bids, the bid form is the exclusive method for the submission of your bids. There's going to be one tab, and we'll have screenshots and a couple of slides, so I won't go into a great amount of detail here. One tab with general information, then one tab per category. Category, we mean sub-25 and 25 and over. And the bid forms will be filled out by you, submitted to us via secure electronic file transfer, and we will provide with your Part 1 notification a step-by-step guide for completion of the bid form, for encryption, optional encryption of the bid form, and then for the transfer of the bid form. You'll have an opportunity to practice, including using a backup method by email in case you have problems with the secure file transfer system 2 days before the bid date on November 10th, and the bid window during which you will be required to transfer your bid form is between 8 a.m. and noon on the bid date. So what you will do once you submit your bid form is to phone us so that we can confirm that we have received the bid form, and we will be evaluating your bid form and phoning you, reviewing and assessing the bid form and phoning you back during a one-hour period between noon and 1 p.m. So if there's anything wrong with your bid form, anything missing information, any deficiency of any kind, then you will have the ability to correct any deficiencies and resubmit your bid form. But it's going to be during that one-hour cure period. So it's essential that you be available to receive the assessment and to resubmit your bid form as necessary during that one-hour cure period. The process after the bid day, we talked a little bit about that when we went over the calendar. So on bid day, we expect to notify you by 6 p.m. to tell you whether any of your bids have been identified as winning bids and will be identified as winning bids to the commission in our report. If you have bids that are identified as winning bids, then you will be required to complete your contract insert to the extent that you have not already done so in your Part 2 proposal. So that's all the information that's required by the IPA to prepare the SPV contract. Then, as I mentioned, expected is for the procurement administrator and procurement monitors to submit their confidential report to the Commission by November 16th and for a decision on the results of procurement event to occur on November 18th. From that point on, within 3 business days, if the Commission approves the results of the procurement event within 3 business days, then the contract execution formalities must be completed. The IPA will prepare the contract cover sheet, system identification form, and the contract more generally on the basis of the information you will have provided in the contract insert. The IPA sends those documents to sellers for execution. And a reminder that in addition, sellers are required to complete Appendix 1, the Illinois State requirements, and you will already have had 2 forms completed, or 1 form completed out of that, the 1.5 for the tax identification portion of those Illinois state requirements. Then within 14 calendar days of the ITC approval, the seller must provide cash or letter credit to fulfill their performance assurance requirements. So note that those are calendar days, and that given the timing of the procurement, Thanksgiving would intervene between any ITC approvals of the procurement event and the date at which you will be required to provide cash or a letter of credit. And a reminder that there is an earliest date at which you could identify your systems if you did bid a forecast quantity. All right, so I'll give a little bit more information now on kind of the bid format and show you a little bit the bid form. So in terms of the bid format, again, a reminder for the sub-25 categories, there's a minimum bid size of 500 RECs, a uniform price for each bid of at least 500 RECs, And in that 500 recs, you can have only identified systems, only a forecast quantity, or a combination of both. In the category of 25 plus, again, the minimum bid size is 500 recs. That's identified systems only, no forecast quantities in that category, and each system can be priced individually. So I mentioned that the bid form had a general information tab that's going to give you information about the product. So there's two categories, but there's three products. So the two categories are just sub 25, so below 25 kW, and 25 to 2,000 kW. But that larger category is divided into two products, the 25 to 500 kW and 500 to 2,000. Now, we mentioned that there were specific percentage targets in terms of procuring RECs in this procurement for each of the products, namely 50%, 15, 15, and 35%. There are specific targets, but there are not specific budgets for each of those products. So on that general information tab, you will provide your information, your contact information, and then in the two subsequent tabs, there's one tab for each of the categories. So there's a tab for the sub-25 category and a tab for the 25-plus category. And it's going to look a little bit like what you see here. So basically what we're trying to illustrate here is that once you are providing bids, namely price in dollars per rec, and the block or the aggregate number of recs for that bid price hits the 500 recs or more, then the bid form will show you a complete. If you are putting in a price, but at that bid you do not have 500 recs or more, then you will get an error in the bid form. An incomplete bid is saying that the minimum of 500 recs has not been reached. So, for example, if you look at System A for a very competitive price of $15 per rec, there's 126 in terms of quantity, and in Section 3, Forecast Quantity 3, there's 324 recs, so that's 450 recs at a price of $15. So we are not reaching the 500 rec minimum, and therefore there is an error, an incomplete, a red square right below those columns, letting you know that the bid needs to be adjusted. There's also then a tab for you to enter your bid for the 25-plus system. So just to be clear, when I'm showing you these tabs, the name of the system and the size and the rec quantity will be pre-populated on the basis of the information that you provide in your worksheet insert in the Part 1. So you don't have to fill all that in. That will be all filled in. What you're going to be filling in are the bid, so the dollar per rec amount, and in the forecast quantity, of course, you're also going to be filling in what that forecast quantity is. So, again, you'll be putting in your bids per rec. For the 25-plus category, you may provide different prices for different systems, and there's also a little summary at the top of each of these tabs providing the total quantity of recs for the category where we are right now, as well as in total. Now, the bid evaluation has kind of two big steps. The first step is to look at the bids with respect to the benchmark, and any bids that fail to meet or beat the benchmarks are eliminated at that point. In the second step, bids are ranked in order of price until all bids are ranked or until the budget is exhausted. So if the step ends because the budget is exhausted, but there are still recs that have not yet been selected, then there may be adjustments that are made to strive to reach the target percentages for each of the products. the 50% for the sub-25 product, the 15% for the 25 to 500, and the 35 for the highest size product. So in that case, the recs that have not yet been ranked for a product, if there's not enough of that product to meet the target percentage, would then replace the highest price rec for another product if that product was above its target percentage. So that replacement will occur as needed to reach the target percentage in the plan. Now, there is an overall budget, as I mentioned, not a budget per product, and the overall budget for the procurement event will not be exceeded. There's a much more detailed description of the evaluation procedure that's provided in Appendix 5 of the rules. And that completes the presentation portion of today's webcast.